where this person's coming from, mm-hmm. how the story developed. So there were three possible stories in this one. So for example, it could have been about her discovery of her duality and identity. It could have been about her seeking and trying to find her Chinese father. Mm-hmm. It could have been about coming to terms and accepting this about herself, like which other stories we have to tell. So many multiple possible tension points. Which one is it going to be the ultimate mm-hmm. story? In the end, it went with like her coming to terms, because one of the rice paper mandates also is about giving people hope, right? If you're getting our magazine and you live in rural PEI, mm-hmm. the idea is that you want to feel a little less alone, that someone has struggled with culture, identity, and that you are doing the same thing, but you can feel yourself reflected there. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of how we develop some of that. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, absolutely, it does. I think, especially knowing that, you know, the voice, I guess like the true heart of D Magazine is to give hope. I think it's a beautiful sentiment to think about. How do you find that voice has changed over the years with Rice Paper, when it first started out, and you know, now that it's has changed a little bit since?
My, you just don't like to ask easy questions, do you? In the early days, a lot of what we dealt with was identity, right? Mm-hmm. Searching, where am I? Pulling a community together and raising our community up, right? Like, for example, one of the profiles on the covers. And I was reading the editorials, past editorials, and one of the editors after me, I believe Alan Cho was one of them. He did the editorial, I think, a few volumes after me, and he said that the change was not from just putting, like, more popular culture out there, right? Because we were trying to position Asian Canadian culture as part of a bigger mainstream. And he said, now we're in a position to put the best between our covers, mm-hmm. because we finally got to the point where there was critical mass, there were enough writers coming in of a certain caliber and standard. Mm-hmm. So I think that was one change. And then the other one would have been less articles on identity. I mean, of course, identity is still there, but it's less angsty. It's more about an inward seeking and then reflecting it outwards again. Whereas I think back then it was like a loud scream. Mm-hmm. Now it's more of a silent contemplation. Like that was where that evolution went. And now it's not even that. It's more subtle. So I think a lot of writing that came in back then was semi-autobiographical, mm-hmm. nonfiction, or very clearly fiction that was about these topics. Mm-hmm. It shifted away into more performance arts, right? Mm-hmm. So stories where they weren't necessarily about this, but identity is gently explored. Mm-hmm. So, for example, maybe articles about, like, colorblind casting. Mm-hmm. Why, you know, I think there was one of the articles was written about 45% of Canadians are minorities, mm-hmm. but maybe 3.2-6% are cast on stages and in TV. This is, bear mm-hmm. in mind, this is like mid-2000s. Mm-hmm. So articles that would just kind of gently talk around this, right? And that maybe we should be looking at casting more minorities, because even if it doesn't make sense from, you know, what you're used to, it makes sense from a capitalist point of view, because it's 45% of the market that you're, you know, excluding.
You're missing out,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. So now you don't have that, right? Like, mm-hmm. for example, we have things like Bridgerton out there, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's amazing. You can look at these people and be, oh, there's a black person, there's an Asian person in, like, Regency, you know, mm-hmm. England. You know, beautiful costumes aside, I'm just going to watch it just because it almost feels like something that Jim would have been dreaming of back then. Or things like you have, like, K-pop Demon Hunters.
Ooh, yeah.
Right? Seeing on manga and big screen someone eating kimbap, right, with Asian eyes, like my East Asian eyes, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's just, it's got its place now, mm-hmm. right? Rice Paper used to be more like a political statement saying, oh, I exist. Now it's more of a, hey, this is where you get your great start and this is where we feature great art. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a shift. And also you see a lot more genre type writing as well. So like here's an example, right? Like, just look at the list that CBC gave this year of like 40 Asian Canadian writers to look out for. Mm-hmm. So I think you have like the Oxford Soju Club by Jin-Woo Park. He's mm-hmm. actually one of our Rice Paper editors now.
Oh.
It's a spy novel mm-hmm. that talks about the Korean diaspora.
Oh.
And I think Jin-Woo was saying that because as a spy, you have to take on a different persona and blend.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we do that all the time as minorities because, you know, you don't want to stand out.
Mm-hmm.
So it's about addressing identity in a different way, right? And that's one very, very good example of it. You have Canon by Li Lai, right, which is a graphic novel. You have dystopian fiction, which is Wonderland Road by Carrie Ann Leong, yeah. Right? You have, let me see, The Hunger We Pass Down by Jen Suk Fong Lee. Mm-hmm. So that's like a horror-tinged transgendered saga, right? That talks about how the protagonist's doppelganger forces her to confront the legacy of violence in her family. Mm-hmm. So very identity, very culture-based, but in a horror-type genre. So not something we would have seen back then. And then, like, we have Ramin Abbas has Major Questions by Ahmad Saber. Mm-hmm. So that was LGBTQ plus novels, right? Also something that would not have been that much in, published, I guess, in the early 2000s. Mm-hmm. So we've come a really, really long way because we're no longer just talking about identity head on. We're talking about it with the sophistication of knowing that we have a place in other genres.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess from that, what do you hope will develop from the Asian literary landscape now?
I guess the sky's the limit, isn't it?
It is, yeah. Right?
I mean, more of this, clearly. I think early on, I do remember this, so one of the things that Jim set out to do wasn't just rice paper, right? Because rice paper was a vehicle to publish Asian Canadian literature. He also has things like, you know, Emerging Writers Award to promote writing. As you know, rice paper, ACWW, they publish anthologies of, you know, writing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's also Literation, which you're aware of, right? A festival to keep promoting awareness on Asian Canadian literature. So back in the day, I remember sometimes we would approach publishers who would see Asian Canadian literature as a sellable subgenre.
Oh.
But they will want the submissions to be couched in history.
Oh.
So they'll tell our writers, write, but I want it to be a history about Asian Canadian history, and you can set the novel there. Or it has to be about identity and a certain exoticism.
Mm-hmm.
But that's no longer the case, right? Because you're seeing things like, you know, what I just described to you, different genre specific. So it's basically there's a lens of Asian Canadian perspective, but at the same time in different genres.
Mm-hmm.
And I think mixed genres would be very exciting. If it's not just in writing, it could be performance art mixed with something else, like visual art, mm-hmm. right? Honestly, I'm very excited and very curious because it hasn't even taken us that long to get here, if you think about it. Yeah, I mean, we're very good at being creative and developing very quickly. We have a lot of expertise in the community,
yeah.
right? So,
and it's interesting to learn, like, how that creativity was limited initially. Like, being forced to write for history, for example. I would imagine that's very limiting to a lot of writers.
Yeah, or it could be freeing to some people, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, if you think about it, if you're a journalist, you're usually given a topic anyway.
Yeah.
You have to be a workaday writer in some sense. So, you know, there's that. But I think a lot of it is well-intentioned.
Mm-hmm.
It's just now, you know, it's marketable, and you know that these writers are not going to really not sell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, no, that's a double negative. But you know that there is a commercial market for this kind of work, which
mm-hmm.
also puts it on the mainstream market. And it's also a chance to use the same content and multiply it tenfold, right? You
mm-hmm.
could have a podcast on the story. You could have a novel. You can have a play on it. And if you multiply it tenfold in different formats, then you increase the chances of it reaching a greater audience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nowadays, I think there's just so much content out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Especially with AI and algorithms.
Mm-hmm.
So the focus is on superficial consumption and like an echo chamber. So when you take your produced art and put it into human hands, so for example, like festivals, spoken word, which isn't just an algorithm,
mm-hmm.
I think that pushes the boundaries a little bit more, or at least it reminds people, hey, it's not just something electronically produced, right? And then when people are exposed to other human created art, you develop and work on it, right? It's a cycle, it keeps building.
Yeah, I guess in that sort of note, as a closing question, in this new age where mediums such as literary magazines are, you know, getting lost, there's a lot of issues with like budget limitations now, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're getting outcompeted with like different forms of media, especially like digital social media platforms. What do you find could play as like the biggest threats to the wider literary landscape? And also on top of that, how can we adapt and or support that?
I think I touched on the threat a little bit earlier, right? The algorithms, the fact that attention spans are shorter. You can take, you know, maybe a literary novel and then rewrite some of the content for a shorter attention span type thing, like maybe instead of a whole length novel, you have like a novella, and maybe novella can be disseminated electronically in a certain way, right? You can act it out, right? Or it could be a podcast where you talk about certain stories, about a character. You have spin-offs, right? So there's a novel part, and then there's, you know, this character, and you follow him in a supporting storyline that's shorter for the tension. And that can also drive readers towards the main work. I think it's about understanding that there's actually more options than ever, and we don't need someone to be, oh, hey, I'm the publisher, I'm sitting in my ivory tower, I'm going to approve your work. You can actually self-publish. So that actually in some ways is not a threat. It's about trying to compete with all the other noise out there. So you just got to make sure your noise is repetitive or is better. So there's one thing. I think the other thing is marginalized voices. I guess the worst thing really would be, the worst threat would be to give up, right? Just to stop. And if anything, Jim Wong Chu showed us we should just keep going, even when the going gets rough. So as long as there is a community, and as long as you build your village of all these voices, I think to some degree, larger or smaller, you make sure that the voices continue to be heard. And in terms of practical things, well, I would say, right, like encourage community sponsorships, community grants, try to take things away from the big corporate. Not that they're bad, but it's just if the community is sponsoring something and you're not looking at it from how much commercial success something's going to be, then it's about just getting a volume work out there, making it possible for someone to produce work. There's also things like donations directly to organizations such as ACWW or other programs that have people who actually want to put those kinds of projects out there. There's also things like just making sure that you beat the algorithm. So for example, if you see there's a podcast or you see there's Instagram posts on something, recommend it tenfold to someone else, because the algorithm will reward the fact that there's a lot of activity. So yay, might as well work with that, right?
Thank you so much for joining us today. Just as like end to this little recording, is there any current or future projects you're working on, and where could people find you?
So right now we're working on archiving and digitizing the entire history of rice paper. So I guess if anyone's listening and you have a pristine or not so pristine copy of rice paper, please reach out to us at info@ricepapermagazine.ca to bring us those copies, because we're trying to make sure that we have a complete set, and some of our versions are not as good as they could be. And we're also always working on future things, right? So keep your eyes peeled on the ACWW website, and you can find us there.
Yeah, thank you so much again for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thank you to Florentina for that interview, and for Jessica Chan for sitting in and participating. This is Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. I'm Jesse. And one of the things we do here at CJSF is called Studio 6, where we have a band come in and perform live right here in the studio. This year we started having those sessions broadcast direct live to air on Friday afternoons. And when we're not doing a live one, we play a previously recorded session. And this week we are releasing the Studio 6 session featuring Stale, a punk, post-punk, post-hardcore, post-rock, whatever, band. So that'll be tomorrow, Friday at 3 p.m. And we'll just give you, I'm just going to give you a little bit of a preview of that, featuring a studio recording, not a Studio 6 recording, of one of their tracks, and then a brief bit of an interview done by Matthew, one of our volunteers here and host of The Other Note. Just to tease and get you excited for tomorrow afternoon at 3. So we're going to start off with Wool by Stale, and then we'll hear a bit of Matt's interview.
Hello, my name is Matthew with CJSF Radio 90.1 FM. I am here with the band Stale.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah. Hey. They just finished their Studio 6 session, and we're now just going to do a quick introduction to get everyone hyped up to watch and listen to this. Can you guys introduce yourselves and what instruments you play?
Hey, I'm Eric. I play bass and sing as well.
I'm Trevor, I'm the drummer, and I also sing.
Aaron, and I sing and play guitar.
Cool. So, I was first introduced to you guys when you were opening for Ivy Gardens, and something that you guys all just kind of mentioned is that you guys all take turns singing. I'm curious, how does that affect your guys' writing process?
I feel like it's just you got to keep it in mind, I guess, the whole time, because you're building vocals not just for one person. You're kind of building it for other people as well, obviously, clearly. It's cool just kind of thinking of, like, the skills that each of us have with our voices and kind of finding those golden moments to kind of... This would be a great moment for Aaron to really, like, belt out something emotional here, and a great moment for Trevor to have a really strong scream part. And, yeah, it's just kind of, like, considering that in the process of writing, yeah.
So do you guys all write lyrics, like, together then? Or is it like one person kind of writes lyrics and then you all cut up and divvy?
Different every time. I think when we first started, it would be like, you know, someone would come up with a line. But I think for the first chunk of our writings, it's been Eric a lot. You know, he is really good at kind of imagining our voices and what we could do all together and stuff. So he brings a lot of the ideas to the table and we hash them out and... You know, I think we're always open to each other's ideas, but I think Eric's got a lot of the juice in these first few songs that we've been writing.
Bring a little juice in, yeah, and then we kind of just build off of that. Get the baseline of like, this is what we have the idea of, and then we kind of, well, I can do this even cooler if I do it this way, and then yeah.
Workshop all together. It's always kind of the three sets of hands coming in and making it the final product.
Yeah. Nice. No, that's awesome. So, kind of building on this, in November of 2024, you guys put out Days Like This, you know, EP single. And one of the things that kind of stood out to me as I was listening to it was it's got this really dark, heavy, and super technical sound. Did you guys have a theme or an idea as you were building that EP up?
Honestly, it was just like three of the first four songs we had written, and we just wanted to get something in there. It felt right to kind of go right with our roots of writing. We'll pick our top favorite songs at the time. We only had, I think, like eight songs at the time when we did that. But yeah, like that's kind of a theme just with our music in general. We tend to come home or come to a practice space after work, and we're a little tired and run down, and we have this dream that we want to kind of live out, and a lot of the songs are that energy of like, let's just get that energy out that we want to express.
Dealing with a lot of dissatisfaction, I guess, coming out of work and you know, just screaming it out twice a week.
No, that's totally fair. Yeah, like the as you guys are saying, you guys are like weekend warrioring, so that totally makes sense.
Yeah, instead of screaming into a pillow, we just scream into microphones.
Into microphones, and now that's good. That's interesting because I was looking at you guys' Bandcamp page, and your tags include post-punk, post-hardcore, post-rock, and post-Malone. Shout out on that one.
I forgot about that.
Yeah, I'm just curious. Like, how would you guys describe your sound then?
I don't know. It's tricky. I mean, I'm always like really bad when it comes to genres and things like that. Like, really, it's a combination of all of the things that we like, right? Like, I don't know. We love, you know, Tool, we love Refused, we love bands that like give a lot of high energy and like more musicianship, but at the same time we're all, you know, sensitive boys, we're all sweethearts. We listen to Elliott Smith, we listen to, you know, singer-songwriters, and like we want to have a broad spectrum of sound. I think it usually comes across a little bit more in the post-hardcore realm, just because that's like I don't know, maybe an influence of like kind of what the bass and drums are doing, but I don't know. It's really, yeah, it's really tough.
Grunge was a word that we used a lot in the beginning, but we also found ourselves not necessarily sounding like a lot of grunge bands or you know, taking those song structure. I think there's a lot of elements that we bring to the table with Stale, so it was hard for us. I think post-hardcore just covers a really broad range, and a lot of bands that start out really heavy and maybe they get a little bit lighter over the years, they seem to nestle into the post-hardcore genre, so we just kind of settled with that one, I think, but it might not be true.
I think basically, like, we like putting on a good show, we like making people want to jump around and dance, and we kind of just pull from whatever melodies and rhythms that kind of give that effect to us when we're playing it, and we want to make people feel that way inside and release themselves a bit as well, and that's kind of it just has fit in post.
Very cathartic, I think, to just let it all out.
Yeah,
that's kind of what we're trying to do, is just stick to what we like in music, but also just kind of discover ourselves as well and try to stay as true to ourselves as possible.
Oh, okay, that's totally fair. So Aaron, then, you know, because you were just talking about discovering yourselves and all this stuff, I kind of have to ask you a question about some of your earlier work. Specifically, I want to ask you a little bit about Lion in a Fire and Gray Eyes. What can you tell us about some of that stuff?
Digging deep. well, Gray Eyes was the last band I was in Ontario. My partner and I decided to move out west, so I just had to kind of make that decision between, you know, am I going with the love of my life or am I going with the love of my life? So I went out west and you know, I love those guys a lot. It was Mike and Matt. But I made the decision to come out west because I was kind of residing in the same place for a long time. So I just took the leap, took the risk, and didn't really have any prospects for music out here. I was just kind of, I think I was off stage for maybe 5 years before these guys came out. But yeah, Gray Eyes was kind of my maybe first attempt at this kind of band.
Oh, yeah.
Where it was three people and grungy, kind of posty, post-hardcore-y stuff. But yeah, I feel like this band has taken a totally different direction. But those are my homies.
Fair.
And Lion in a Fire, I was just...
All right, that is part of Matt's interview with the band Stale, whose Studio 6 live performance will be featured tomorrow afternoon, Friday, August or July 31st at 3 p.m. as part of our Studio 6 program. You can tune in live to hear it on the radio, and it will be released on CJSF's YouTube so that you can watch along as well. Thanks for hanging out with me this hour. Democracy Now! Is up next, and coming up over the rest of the day is a whole bunch of really great programming. It's Thursday, so we got Beats and Eats, Call Me Negotiator, Free Voices, Analog Archives, The Arch Show, Wham Bam East Fan. So much coming up, so much good stuff. So keep it locked right here at 90.1 FM, CJSF, Burnaby, your campus community radio station. Thanks for your support. Can't do this without you, and always excited at the opportunity to come on and share some stuff with you out there. Thanks a lot. Once again, we're going to leave with a little bit of music to carry us into the beginning of Democracy Now! This is a track by local artist Buddy. That's right, we're just swapping the local music to the end of the show. And this is from their most recent release, Glass, which rules and is out now. This one is called Stressed in Paradise. I will see you next week. Thanks again for listening, and take care of yourself. Goodbye.
We left the shore for something.
Paradise. Ain't it nice? So stressed.